Now, NPHET's Professor Philip Nolan has been speaking about the limits of HEPA filters in cleaning indoor air to remove the virus. He's reported to have said HEPA filters can be useful in situations like hospitals, where you know where the aerosol or infection is coming from, but that they're not useful in the far corner of a room with 20 or 30 people, where you don't know if the source of infection is near the filter. Now, the government did set up an expert group on the role of ventilation in reducing transmission of COVID-19, and they did last March recommend the use of HEPA filters in poorly ventilated areas. The government, according to Health Minister Stephen Donnelly on Primetime this week, is basing its policy of open windows and doors in schools on the advice of the HSE's Antimicrobial Resistance and Infection Control Oversight Group. And now the chair and a former member of the expert ventilation group that recommended the HEPA filters, they've challenged Professor Nolan's remarks. And one of them is Orla Hegarty, assistant professor at UCD School of Architecture. Good morning, Professor Hegarty.
Good morning.
Now, you were on this group, you're not currently. You and the current chair both taking issue with those reported remarks from Professor Nolan. So here's the simple question. Does a HEPA filter work in a room of 20 or 30 people if it's not close to a source of infection?
Yes, it does. And I think if people can visualise it the same way that they might see a fish tank where there's a filtration unit in the corner of a fish tank and all of the water in that tank is being passed through and being cleaned of particles and the water will be clear. It's a very similar approach. Air moves around in the same way that water does and it mixes. And we don't see it, but that's how it behaves and we know the physics of air. So we know that HEPA filtration is very effective and in fact the HSE use it themselves in hospitals, it's used on airlines, and it's used in you know the FDI factories where we would see computer chips being manufactured and medical devices. So it's a very widely accepted technology.
The report in March from the expert group said there's no direct evidence that the use of HEPA filters can reduce the transmission of SARS-CoV-2. It is widely accepted that they will be effective at removing a substantial proportion of the airborne virus. So they're not a magic wand, but they're a mitigating tool. Is that fair to say?
Well, they can be very effective. I mean, obviously, ventilation dilutes and refreshes the air and lets the virus out of a building or a vehicle, but filtration can supplement that by removing it. And they're highly effective. There's lots of evidence now. In fact, just this week, there's a report from Addenbrooke's Hospital in Cambridge where they have used plug-in HEPA filtration units in the hospital and immediately found a reduction in virus in the air. And that's actually measured the amount of virus in the air. So we know that it works, and we know from the physics of this that it has been measured to work. You know, the bottom line is really, I suppose people are confused by so many different rules and suggestions at the moment, but if we all breathed clean air for 2 weeks we wouldn't have a pandemic. So you know, the misstep I think in NPHET has been that hasn't been prioritised. There's a lot of confusion with people about how the virus spreads. People are still concerned about hand washing and cleaning surfaces, when in fact almost all transmission is from breathing infected air and almost all of that is indoors. So we know the conditions and we can prevent those conditions. It's just a matter of the policymakers engaging properly with environmental science and letting people who have the expertise inform policy.
How big a deal would it be to install HEPA filters in schools around the country? What would it mean in terms of cost and practicalities?
Well, as Professor John Wenger has said, it's probably not needed everywhere. I mean, we will have schools where we maybe have rural schools where we have small numbers in classrooms, but we have hotspots. We have schools where we have crowded classrooms where just the configuration of the building maybe is on the sheltered side and the wind doesn't blow air through the room and doesn't clear it out. We have particular conditions in particular schools. And I think also we probably have hotspot urban areas too, where children maybe are, you know, exposed in other ways that they're using public transport to school. They might be in overcrowded or multi-generational housing. So I think we need to target it first to the areas where children are most at risk, and that would be maybe younger children in childcare settings, children in those kind of crowded classrooms. And schools have had CO2 monitors since September, so I think they know at this stage which classrooms are the real high-risk areas and maybe start from there and work down.
One of the issues, of course, with the open windows and doors that many people are reporting, anecdotally at least, is the cold. Are there minimum temperatures for classrooms and workplaces as we open windows and doors to ventilate?
Yes, there are minimum temperatures for workplaces, and I think people, you know, human beings are comfortable at about 18 degrees. So that's why I suppose we're a lot lower risk in the summer, because when the outdoor temperatures are at comfortable temperatures, we ventilate our buildings very freely. So it's not so much that we spend more time outdoors in summer. We ventilate our buildings very freely to cool them down and to feel comfortable with a, you know, the temperature is comfortable. Once the winter comes, we start closing windows and doors and we trap this infected air. And that's why the risk rises. It's obviously not, it's not tenable to have children sitting in 5 or 10 degrees at the moment. People need to be much more pragmatic about, you know, alternative solutions. And that's obviously firstly dressing children more warmly, but also maybe engaging with other buildings that are available in the community so that people can spread out and be more comfortable. Because some of the risk here is from actually just having too many people in a small space, and physically trying to put through enough air to refresh the air is making those conditions just far too cold for people to be in.
As I understand it, there's a trial going on in primary school in Leeds. There's a control group of schools, and this is in primary schools. Then there's a number of schools using HEPA filters, and then there's a number using ultraviolet technology to clean the air. And they'll compare and contrast the results. Would that be a useful initiative here?
I don't think we need to second guess the physics. I mean, this is all proven technology. We don't need to go back to square one. It may be new to people who have a medical background, but it's not new to anybody who's involved in buildings or physics or chemistry or engineering. We don't need to provide evidence to show that this works. We know it works, and this technology is accepted. The ultraviolet is using it in upper rooms generally, where having ultraviolet at high level in rooms can kill the virus in the air, but does have specialist applications, and it is used in hospitals in some situations. In the short term, the difficulty is that that needs a specialist installation and specialist advice, and it can't be rolled out quickly. Whereas HEPA filtration is a cheap technology; it's available off the shelf. As you know, somebody can go and buy one to put in a nursing home room and plug it in and use it the same day. So you know, it's much more widely available. In fact, there's plenty of DIY versions where people are building their own filtration and, you know, it's hard to get it wrong because it's very basic. It's a fan and a filter, which is a fabric that removes the particles as it passes over it. The other advantage is that longer term, you know, this is going to help with children who have allergies, who have asthma. It also will catch other viruses, colds and flu and RSV. So there's a huge long-term advantage to doing this, particularly in certain classrooms.
Professor Orla Hegarty from the School of Architecture in UCD, thank you. It's 25 minutes past 8.